Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where we discuss the biblical roots of our people and our faith. Linked to Accurate Precious Metals Refineries, our morning show sponsor at HebrewNationOnline.com. Lines are open, so call 503-967-3001 if you would like to join in the conversation. You can also chat with us online in the morning show chat room at HebrewNation.net. And welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show this Wednesday morning. And usually I say this beautiful Wednesday morning, but it's nasty and raining here. Where is it? What's it doing at your place there, Teresa?
It's overcast. We have a fog warning here. I've loved it the last few days. It's been like driving through London, you know, during werewolf times. It's beautiful.
Yeah, your favorite time when it's rainy and foggy and you're all socked in. Yes.
Fog's like icing on the cake of a rainy cake. It's beautiful.
Oh, that's great. I've never heard that before. Well, as everybody probably suspects by now, we have Teresa Castellino and me, Kimberly Rogers, and we do have a guest with us this morning that we promised to have on last week when Larry was on. And this is a gal that I met in Jordan when I was there, and I just fell in love with her. She is a lovely lady and so knowledgeable in prophecy. Her name is Joni, and I want to introduce Joni to you, audience. Joni, how are you?
I'm just doing well. I'm very blessed. Thank you.
Well, that's good. You know, I was so impressed with your knowledge of prophecy, especially regarding safe places, the safe places that are in Scripture. And before we get to that, though, I want to talk a little bit about some of the comments that we had about our program last week, because it brought out the fear that some people have regarding Muslims. You know, we've done a very good job of scaring people about Muslims in this country, and I realized that even in 2010, you know, I was teaching about Esau, but I was saying to people, Esau is your enemy, not necessarily everybody else who is in Islam. You see what I'm saying? And I'm trying to get people to learn who is Esau and who is not, because those who are not Esau are not necessarily our friends or our enemies. You know, they may be our friends. And so I think that's one of the things that I learned in Jordan, that it confirmed what I had suspected all along. But American media paints, you know, this picture of, you know, like everybody's, if you're a Muslim, you're just bad, you know. And so we need to kind of dispel that a little bit. And I think last week's show really got some people thinking about it. What do you think, Teresa?
I would agree. It was an interesting reaction on Facebook. People were concerned. People are, of course, scared. Or maybe not. Well, maybe scared. Cautious in their dealings. Very guarded. And I don't take exception to that. Where I have my concern is when a whole group of people is vilified because they're all deceived. And if we go to doing that, there's really no one left at the end of that trail. Everyone in one manner or another has some deception. Now, it just happens to be that Islam stands out, especially because of acts that are happening right now in the Middle East and the United States, worldwide, actually. They're so egregious, and they certainly do not represent our Father in heaven or his Son. And that's part of the pushback. But we also need to learn that we ourselves have come out of deception. We ourselves have come out of error, and the Father will call who he will. And that will include Muslims.
Right.
There was going to be a great gathering during the last days. It's going to be so many people that there's not going to be enough laborers. If you can just imagine that, it's not going to just be, you know, people from your neighborhood. It's going to be people from around the world.
Right. Well, as I have said on that Facebook post, Islam has killed 270 million people over the last 1400 years, and they have forcibly converted hundreds of millions to Islam, and those are, a lot of them are Jews and Christians. And just like, you know, we in the Hebrew Roots community have awakened and come out of our Christianity, there are people awakening who were connected to the Lord way back when. You know, they're waking up now, and they're in Islam. But one of the things that has come out in the last couple of days is an article that, Joni, you mentioned to me, and I did not put it in Beast Watch News, but you mentioned it, and you said it was regarding a speech that Jordan's King Abdullah II made. And so why don't you tell us about that? Because you were very impressed with it.
Yes, he is in close connection with all of Europe, actually. And he was there addressing them in the EU. And he is the king of the most westernized Arab nation there is. They have been incredibly more modernized and more open to the world. His opinion was extremely clear. If you get the opportunity, it is on the Koenig site, worldwatch.org. And it is extremely clear his kindness and tenderness and his absolute covering here of the earliest Christians that were ever formed. You see, our Lord and Savior spent his last 4 months here on in Jordan at the crossing where John had been baptizing. That's where it says in the scriptures. And at that time, it was between the Hanukkah feast. It was from there that he wiped the dust off and came back over here. And he did not go back up until a week to 2 weeks before Passover, where he was to die. So he is very special here, even to the Muslims. And that place has just been opened up in the year 2000, where his baptism was, and they have discovered the four or five earliest churches that were created, were started right here. Now, Abdullah refers very clearly in his speech to the Christians that are here and the fact that many of the refugees that have come to Jordan it's because they are Christians, and how grateful he is for their presence here all of these 2,000 years. So he has a very different opinion than those that you have heard of many, many Muslims. But what we found here when we came was nothing but the favor of the Lord in their eyes, and this is why the Lord has chosen them to receive all the people called by his name for this time, because they are the most gracious people on the face of the earth. They take us into their families. They tell us that they will protect us even to lose their own lives. And that is the culture they are, for they have always met the sojourner with food and water. Now, there were those times in Jordan where they did not let the Hebrews through, and they even killed them at other times as they would come across the border. But their culture does not say that. Their culture says they are to greet all of the sojourner, and it's in the heart of many of them. Plus, there are many Christians here. Now, anyone, though, that is afraid doesn't have any business thinking about coming here or dealing with this situation. So we would only encourage today those who are hearing the voice of the Lord. And anything I say to you from the scriptures, because that's where he's taught me from the first that I came in, anything that I say needs to confirm what he has been talking to you of already, or else you should dismiss it, because okay. I am here to confirm the remnant who are hearing from the Father by the word of Yahweh. So that's where I'm at.
That's well said.
Yeah. Joni, how long have you been in Jordan?
I visited Jordan in 94 and then came here with my belongings in 95, and I've been living here permanently since 97. So it's been about 20 years.
Yeah. So, and in that time, your experience has been very positive.
Absolutely.
Right. You know, one of the things that we don't understand here in the West is just how important an act it is when you invite someone into your home. In the Near East, bringing somebody into your home is an act of covenant. And as you know, Teresa, you mentioned that right here in your text.
Yeah, it is, right? Isn't that true, Joni? Isn't that a very serious, it would be a serious breach on their part if they invited you into their home and then withdrew their protection or their hospitality? Isn't that a great big, no-no?
Absolutely. Like I said, they are very easy to become friends with, to talk with. And here in Jordan, they are taking English from kindergarten. And so very rarely do I find someone who doesn't enjoy speaking English with me to practice. So it makes it very easy for us to come and find many, many friends here.
What drew you to Jordan in the first place?
It was the voice of the Lord. And that's a long process. I had prayed for 35 years to get to go to the mission field. And my husband refused all those years. And we finally met a couple who were taking the gospel to the parts of the earth that no one else wanted to go to. And they needed a dentist, which my husband was. And so this is how we got started. And in a couple of years, so we went to the bottom of the canyon in Mexico, that even Mexico calls that hell down there. That's where we were ministering for about 3 years. And then my friend and her husband moved over here to Israel. And worked on their citizenship and became permanent residents and were begging me to come. And when I did come, I did live with them. And we together heard from the Lord, even separately, the tasks that we were to have here. And her husband was to work in the water department, which he did. And we were to take the gospel from Jerusalem to Judea to Samaria to the ends of the earth, which was being done as well. And then they were to work with the secret believing Orthodox people. Now, in 95, there was no one who could tell us that was a reality. When we came to visit in 94, that was, and we were looking for them to move over, but they said there isn't any such, but there was. But the fourth thing was to build, and they did ministry with them and found them, and they came to us. In fact, the Lord brought them to us. So that was part of that. Before I came to live with them, they were in that portion. But once I came, the Lord had already said the fourth thing was to build cities of refuge. Well, my friend didn't understand that at all, because she was going to be raptured out of here. So it was a process of the Lord working with her. And at that time, you could not cross from Israel to Jordan. You could not come into Jordan if you had been in Israel. Okay. And so we were put in touch with Noah Hutchins. If you've ever heard of him, the radio, Southwest Radio Bible scholar who had taken for 30 years now trips to Petra. No one else knew what Petra was. It was only found 100 years ago, about when the people started returning to Israel, because that's been about 100 years now. So it was hidden until the late 1800s. It was rediscovered, but you couldn't come to see it, and it wasn't much of anything at that point. So we didn't even know where it was when the Father told us to go to Petra. And yeah. And Kate, yeah. My friend is looking in Israel for it, because she didn't even know it was over there. Her eye happened to fall over here, and she went, oh, no, there's no way the Father wants us to go over there because of who they were.
Funny.
And what was going on. And so she was fighting pretty strongly about it. And it was not until the peace accord in 1994 that the borders were opened up, and you were able to come. So at that point, they began coming to visit. And when I came, I shipped all of my goods to Aqaba, Jordan, and I'd never even seen Aqaba, Jordan. The Lord gave us a house here. And so he was definitely saved to come here. And as my friend was kicking and screaming about it, when she woke up one morning, the Father said to her, "Do you not know that I come from Taman?" And she said, "No, Father, I don't know that. I don't even know that word. I don't know what Taman is. And I'm going to test this spirit. Where is that written?" And he said, "Have you not read Habakkuk 3:3? And she looked it up. And let's see if I'm just going to paraphrase it. But it says, Elohim, and it's written in your translation as came. But if you will look at in the interlinear, it is the simple present tense verb. So it's actually Elohim comes from Taman, the Holy One from Mount Paran. I think I need to read it for you, because this is what got me started. I didn't know what Taman was either. I began to search it out, but at that point I didn't have my interlinear in my Strong's. But once I got it, Taman is the south of Jordan, just as Negev is the south of Israel. Mm-hmm. In fact, the twin boards of the tabernacle on the south that we translate south-southward are both Negev, the south of Israel, and Taman, the south of Jordan, because we're learning that that is the south from the Euphrates down to the Red Sea. That is Israel itself. It's the whole of Israel, not just the part that they, in fact, four of the tribes were even left here on this side. So it is Israel. So that was interesting to know. Now, when we came here, so anyway, because the Lord had done that, I began to read other places in the scriptures he was coming from. And I see that they are, I come from the east, I come from Mount Sinai, I come from Edom, I come from Teman, I come from Mount Paran, I come from Seir, come from Bozrah, Mount of Olives, of course, when he puts his foot down, also from Selah, which is Petra. You won't find the word Petra in your scriptures. You have to find it under the word Selah. And the King's Highway. All of these places are straight up Little Jordan.
Yep. Teresa and I were looking at that. It's amazing. The King's Highway, Joni, we were like, you, just crying.
We live on it. We live on it. And even Paran, they have named a Paran over there in Israel, but the higher mountains, and even when Yeshua said, at that time when the abomination that desolates is set up in the holy place, you are to flee, those of you who are in Jerusalem and Judea, to the mountains of Israel. The mountains of Israel are Jordan. The hills of Judea are in Israel, and Mount Carmel is on up in the north, but still the mountains are Jordan. And as you drive down the highway on either side next to what used to be the border, because there's really no border between the two in the southern part below the Dead Sea, other than what military they watch, but it still is open down there. But I forgot where I was going. Oh Lord. Anyway, but I was trying to say to you, there's a highway that runs along that on both sides, and you can clearly see that the where they have the Paran is not as high as on this side. Well, the Paran wilderness runs east and west, from the west to the east, and is in here in Jordan as well. And right. So Mount Paran is up that mountain range where also Selah and the mountains, they're called Sarah Mountains still. The Seir mountain range is up there. And then there's another mountain range in Petra itself. And it's mentioned in the Song of Solomon. It's very interesting how the Song of Solomon points out this area. In chapter 1, our woman who is the bride of our bridegroom, Yeshua, says that she is in the tents of Kedar. And whenever you see the word Kedar in your English, it's really a Q, Kedar. It's the Kidron Valley, even in Israel, but it means the Bedouins. The Kedar is the Bedouin. So she's in the tents where the Bedouins are, which is definitely here. And then it tells you that in verse 2:14, my dove, you are in the clefts of the rock. And the rock is Selah. Now, remember what that was? That was Petra.
Joni, we've got only about 4 or 5 seconds left before we have to take a break. And so we're going to cut it off here and then get back to this on the other side.
Okay. You carry me through the darkness
night, through the shadow of death. Lancaster Drive in Salem, Oregon, or call your order in at 503-316-1220. Shalom.
AM 1220, KPJC Salem.
And welcome back to the second half of the Hebrew Nation Morning Show with your two cup of Hebrews, Teresa Casalino, Cappuccino, Teresa. You know, I mangled your name again. Are you there? I might have lost.
I'm sorry. I was muted.
You were muted, and I mangled your name, and then therefore you.
No, I was laughing.
Yeah, you. And this is Kimberly Rogers, and we've got Joni with us this morning, and we're talking on the other side of that break. We were talking about the area of Ishmael, the Paran Mountains, and that I wanted to say something about that because, Joni, as you were talking, you know, when the children of Israel went through that area on their journey, the Ishmaelites did not give them one iota of trouble. It wasn't until they got over to the area of Edom that they had trouble. It was the Edomites that would not give them water and let them pass. And, you know, Ishmael has a history of not being at odds with the children of Israel in the way that Esau was. Although Ishmael is with Esau, you know, it's kind of one of those characteristics is why I believe that the Shiites are probably more like Ishmael than the Sunnis, because the Sunnis seem to always want to kill the children of Israel, and the Ishmaelites have always been willing to just kind of live with them, you know, and let them alone. They, you know what I'm saying? And that area there, also in Isaiah 60, I posted this note on our Facebook page, on my Facebook page, about Isaiah chapter 60 and how, if you go to read that chapter, the Ishmaelites that are there are the ones who are going to be helping. They're going to be coming and converting according to Isaiah 60. I mean, and the fact that on the break you were talking about Simeon is still in the area there with, you know, in Jordan, that was part of their, you said Reuben and Gad and Manasseh and Simeon, is still there. You know, any of those tribal peoples that were left in that area, they're children of Israel, and they're going to wake up. They're going to be coming.
Exactly. And not only that, they are cousins, and there has been a great deal of intermarrying amongst them. And there are Hebrew people that are Jordanian.
Right.
There, a lot of them don't let it be known, but even by the names, when the Lord speaks to us about it, he has us ask them. Right. And we've done this on several occasions, and they have checked with their heritage and their family, and it is true. And well,
you know what? Last week when we were talking to Larry, I mentioned, I think, about the Hashemites and how that name, that's the name of the ruling family in Jordan, but Hashemite is how they say it, but it's actually Hashemite.
Yes. And it means famous also. So that's why they have chosen it. But also there's other things that I don't need to go into, but it's even true that people have no idea that the Arabs are interspersed in Israel, and they're living side by side with the Jewish people. And when they closed, did the wall to separate the east from the west there for protection, there were 50,000 families that moved over to the Israel side because they wanted to be living with the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so people do not understand that actually the Arabs are living and dwelling in 90% of that land over there. So people, you know, have misconception by the news that needs to be overcome. They get along quite well with each other. We had a house in Arad over there, and our next door neighbors were Arab, and they were gracious and wonderful. And anyway, it's not as it's been portrayed for propaganda reasons.
Well, it's obvious that there's more to benefit by the adversary if he can divide us. It doesn't matter if it's in the house or outside of the house, as long as he can divide us. So if we're made to constantly suspect one another, constantly deride one another, vilify one another, then there's little chance of a relationship forming. And our calling is about relationships, and it's about learning how to walk together, even though we might have different opinions. And please don't mistake what I'm saying, audience. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm going on people that cut people's heads off. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the people that exist inside of every religion, every ideology that are his. And we need to learn how to discern and recognize and be able to accept that these people have been called by the Father. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Absolutely. And then we've been called to this place, and it is only 2-3% Christian, as is Israel, as is Lebanon, as is Syria, and Turkey, all of those. It's a very small percentage of Christian. And we know from evangelism back in the 80s about the 1040 window, which is the most unevangelized area in the world. And it includes Israel and Jordan. So, if we want to continue Yeshua's, plea to us, to go to the end of the earth, that's the place that we should be, to be sharing our faith and making friends. But also, remember how Yeshua said, "Who is this wise and faithful servant whom I find feeding my children when I come?" And we thought, well, that's just the gospel. And I thought that even as we were doing evangelism, that's just the gospel. But in fact, that's exactly what we're doing when we're coming here, is to not do it in an open way, but just to do it by love. And so it's a great call if the Lord's calling you to it. But I want to be that wise and faithful servant that is feeding his children when he comes. And there is one area that is spoken of in the scriptures that is the safety zone. And most of us know that's in Daniel 11:41, where the destroyer, who is the anti-Messiah, is destroying all the nations. Have we been seeing some of that?
Yeah.
The last few years. But he's destroying all the nations, but these escape his hand.
All right.
Edom, Moab, and the foremost sons of Ammon. All those three regions are little bitty Jordan on the right beside Israel. Edom is the south. Moab is beside the Dead Sea area. And then there's the Ammon area north. And it is specifically speaking really of Edom and Moab because it didn't say Ammon. Ammon is directly under Damascus, by the way, okay. And not too far. But it said Edom and Moab will escape his hand, and only the foremost sons of Ammon. And that could be King Abdullah's or some of the precious Christians who were up there could be them. Those escape his hand because I believe they'll be down here. The king has a castle down here as well as one up in Ammon, and Aqaba is his favorite part of Jordan.
Really?
So we're in a good spot in that regard. Now, yeah. Why should we even care if we're going to be raptured out of here? If we're going to be evaporated and go to the Lord in the air, but we're missing those scriptures pretty clearly. And that right. Those, when you're drawn up into the air, it's to go to the judgment seat of the Father and the judgment seat of Messiah, Yeshua. And so we need to be careful of that because it's not clear in there that that's the case at all. And there are three destinies for those who are Yeshua's. And those references, there's one in Revelations, but they all say that one in Revelation is a Revelation, let me find it.
Okay.
I've got it written right here.
Okay. It occurred to me while we were talking how likely it is that the people in that region where you live are part of the lost tribes. And as Kimberly mentioned earlier, how many of them had been forced into conversion of Islam, because I think Larry said last week that rather than pay the tax, which had to be paid in gold, people converted from their original faith into Islam. And who knows if this was a secret thing or a public, you know, a heart thing, but his children are throughout that region intermixed.
Oh yes. Yep.
Did you find it, Joni?
Well, I'm just gonna say what it is. You know it because you've okay. heard it many times, and it is in here three times. And it's just that those who live by the sword die by the sword. Mm-hmm. Those who are destined for captivity, into captivity they go. Right. And then there will be those who are in the great remnant, those who escape. And so those are the three destinies, and we actually have to pray and ask the Father which of those is our portion.
Right.
Okay. And if we're going to be overcomers, as we're told to be in the book of the revelation of Yeshua, Mashiach, that's the revelation of Yeshua, not John, but it is Revelations. It tells us that's what where it's saying, and it is very clear there that if we are Israel, which we are in Ephesians 2, we are the commonwealth of Israel, it says, and back once we were lost from it, but now that's who we are. And it is even the kingdom of Elohim himself. But that's who we are. And back in two books back, it tells us that if we are Messiahs, that we have the inheritance of Abraham. So this made me wake up to the fact that perhaps we should be returning to the land. Now, that really isn't necessary in these last 2,000 years to be in the land because the Lord had sent us out. But if the safety zone is there in Israel, greater Israel, then it might be necessary that we come and stand with our brothers and sisters and stand for this land and be where this place is.
Right. Because if we're the last generation, then we're being called home.
That's it. We are. And so that he had written that in my heart as I'd prayed for my children for 6 years before I came here. And I was using one of the gathering portions. I'd asked him what to pray for him, and he'd given me 12 of those. And after I was in Israel and I began to hear what the diaspora scriptures were that they were praying every day, that's what it was. And the Lord had had me praying that over my family for years. So it wasn't as hard for me to realize that I needed to come to the land. But then to come to Jordan was a different thing. But at the same time, I knew that one scripture. That's all I knew. But once I began looking at these other 10 that I gave to you, where he says, I come from these, it wasn't once he said it for each one of those. It was 2, 3, 8, 5 times for each one.
Wow.
And Isaiah 43 really caps it off for me in these days where he tells us, I've got it right here. Verse 1 of Isaiah 43, and now thus says Yahweh, who created you, Jacob, and formed you, Israel. Sounds like the whole house there, doesn't
it? Right.
Stop fearing, for I am your Redeemer, calling you by your name, you to me. And then he describes several places, several steps of coming through the waters, and I rescue you, and so forth. It's very similar to the Psalm 107, which is also talking about all of this. Then he says again in verse 4, stop fearing, for I am with you. I come from the east, bringing your seed, gathering you from the west, saying to the north, give wow. them up. And that was what they were saying in 1989 when the wall came down. They were saying, give them up. And we know they've come by the millions back, and they've come by the tens of thousands from Africa, and they're walking from China. They're coming from all over at this point. But he says that was to the north. So then he has the south left, right?
Right.
And to Taman, whenever you see the word south in your scriptures, get out your Strongs and see if it's the word Taman or is it the word Negev. But Taman, remember, is only the south of Jordan. It's Edom down to Sinai, which we know is directly under us here. Mm-hmm. And the scripture I was about to tell you in Song of Solomon was 2:17, where the bride also was there in the mountains of Betar. And that's the mountains that were in Petra. The little Petra mountains are Betar, and it's the ones that have the cleft in the rock. And at Sinai, there's a mountain with the cleft in the rock. Now, that's not a gracious hand holding you. It is a dividing of the rock. And there's a divided rock at Sinai. They have it now in the pictures when you look up the real Sinai. And there is one there at Petra at the Seek. And so where we're talking about is between those two that indicate covenant. Okay, so that gets us back to Taman. Now, Taman is the one that didn't let them come through when they came up out of Kadesh Barnea, and were asking permission to go up on the high part of the King's Highway, and they wouldn't let them do it. They made them circle and go around. And that's why it's been a desolation here until it was rediscovered in the 1800s. Desolation. And he says that in the scriptures. He made it a desolation because of that. But now, wow, he says to Taman, and this is what we're to pray for these people. Stop holding back the coming of my sons from afar and my daughters from the ends of the earth. Everyone called by my name. Let's stop right there just a minute. Oh my goodness. He is telling Taman that they're coming there. And it's everyone called by his name. Has he not been giving us his name back?
Yes.
At that time, an hour. Has he not been giving us the feast back? Yes. In fact, those who are the remnant are the ones who are grieving over the feasts, it says in Isaiah. So, but anyway, it's everyone called by my name is coming to Taman. That's what it's saying. For wow, glory, I created him, that was Jacob. I formed him, that was Israel. And then in the Hebrew, and you don't get it in your translation, there is a word off, which is a sigh from his heart and a blow of his mouth. And then it says Aish, and it's do or make, so your version only says make, but it also means I have gathered to myself. I have gathered you to myself, he's saying to the whole house of Israel. And where? In Taman. Now, that's very strange, and I'm sure everybody has bells going off, but there is an eight times it tells us he's in Taman in the scriptures. And one of them is Job 9:9. Now, Job was the oldest book written well before, and it talks about Torah even, as do eight other places before Moses' law that they speak of as the Torah is only Moses. It's not. It was there long before, and it was in the heavens. The scroll that's talked of in the scripture in the heavens, the Torah was there. But here, Job, yes.
I just wanted to say we've got a couple of minutes left, and I can totally understand why Kimberly says she can just listen to you for hours. But I just wanted you to know that we had 2 minutes left, and I wanted you to know that so that you could say what you wanted to say without running out of time.
This is one of the things I wanted to say because it's Taman again.
Go
in Job, he teaches his friends using the star constellation names that are still there. There's still names that have been handed down through all these generations. And then in the last two, three chapters, Yahweh himself is teaching Job using those constellation names. And one of the names there is the name for the ship, Noah's ship. Now, this deliverance is going to be like Noah's time, right? Isn't that what Yeshua said in 24 of Matthew? Okay, and so it is the name of this ship. It's Kedari Taman, and they've translated it Chambers of the South because Taman means the South. But it also, Kedari is also his bridal chamber is in Taman. So
wow,
that's something for you to meditate on.
Hey, Joni, we're gonna have to wrap up here, but I want to let everybody know that you gave me a piece of paper with just covered with scriptures regarding what you're talking about, plus a whole lot more. And I was going to type it out, but there is so much on here. And I think that I'm just going to, I asked you about this. I'm just going to go ahead and scan this and make a PDF of it. And we'll put this in our podcast so that people can download it and take a look and start researching these scriptures, because we need to know these things. And Joni, I want to thank you for coming on the show. You have been just a blessing. Excellent.
Thank you.
Excellent.
You're most welcome. I enjoyed you.
Wow. Well, everybody, we're running out of time really fast, and so we're going to have to take a break here. And we will be back with another special guest after these messages.
Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where we discuss the biblical roots of our people and our faith. Linked to Accurate Precious Metals Refineries, our morning show sponsor at HebrewNationOnline.com. Lines are open, so call 503-967-3001 if you would like to join in the conversation. You can also chat with us online in the morning show chat room at HebrewNation.net.
And welcome back to the second hour of the Hebrew Nation Morning Show on this Wednesday morning in Washington and Pennsylvania, at least. We've got Teresa Casalino and me, Kimberly Rogers, your two cup of Shebrews. And I want to tell you, dear audience, about an experience that I had in Israel. This is, it may seem like an insignificant experience at the moment that it happened, but as time has progressed, I have realized just how important that little experience was. And it simply was this, that I found out about a conference, a very special conference that is going to happen in Israel in May. And I wanted to have the leaders of the conference on. This is Ephraim and Ramona Frank. And the reason that I'm having them on is because this is yet another example of how the Lord is calling His people and is moving His people. These things that are happening with me and with Eddie Chumney in Jordan and with Ephraim and Ramona Frank having this very special conference, that's no coincidence. Right. I believe that the Lord is almost like shouting to us, get ready to come home. Get prepared because it's going to be time soon. So let me introduce Ephraim and Ramona Frank.
Good, I guess good morning to you. And it's evening here. So,
yes.
But it's delight. It's a delight to be with you. We like the title of Hebrew Nation Radio, a nation and not a denomination.
Thank you. Well, it's great to have you guys here. Kimberly has talked about y'all quite often, and I'm delighted that you've come on the show to talk about this conference. And she called it the Ephraimite conference, but you said that's not the actual name, so people don't need to be turning up to your place, right?
Yeah, it's not after my name, it's actually not a conference; it's a congress.
Okay.
I suppose if there's a definition definition difference, but anyway, we're calling it a congress. Not because it's a first Congress, but it's sort of a continuation of Congresses that go all the way back 150 years. As everybody knows, the awakening of the Jewish nation started back, you know, in the late 1800s and, you know, progress down through its history. Yes.
Ephraim, can I interrupt you? I think that maybe you have the radio show open. You might have Hebrew Nation Online open on your computer. And it's doubling up with what is being said. So if you could...
I hope I don't lose you.
Yeah, you'll need to turn off the show instead of turning down your volume, because then you won't be able to hear us.
Right.
Okay, is it
okay? Should be okay now.
Yes, I think that's better. I wanted everybody to be able to hear what you said clearly. It's okay. So the nation of Israel has been waking up for over 150 years. I mean, you know, I don't know about you guys, but when I was in church, I was taught that, you know, all this thing was going to come suddenly and nobody would be aware of anything, you know, but that's not true. And here we are, just seeing, the Lord do his work of waking up his people and preparing them to go home, to go back to the land.
I think when history will be looked back on years from now, we will see that what we're experiencing in the moment is part of a continuum, something that hasn't ceased, something that started, of course, way back in biblical days, but talking about our more recent years, started with the awakening of the Jewish people to their identity and to their call to return to the land. And that what is happening with the other house of Israel is truly a continuing of that same stream of the awakening and of the re-identifying. Of course, it has the re-identifying of the Northern Kingdom is quite different from the reassembling of the Jewish people, but yet it's on the same continuum. It's the move of Zionism to be gathered together and to return to the land. And of course, there is a great spiritual aspect and side to it. And we've only seen the very beginning now, but this is not, in a way, it's not really separate from the movement of, that was started by our Zionist fathers, Jewish Zionist fathers. And this is now the next step, even as we read in Zechariah 12. We see the order. We see very clear order of things, and so it is no wonder it shouldn't really surprise us that we're now moving into the more and more rapidly. There's an acceleration into what he is now about to do and will be doing with the remnant or the first fruit, as you will, of the Northern Kingdom, and how that is going to affect ultimately and ripple through the Jewish community, through the Jewish nation. But that's yet to happen.
Right.
We know from Ezekiel 37, you know, very clearly it says these, you know, when these two sticks are held up of Judah and Ephraim, that as it's described there, these are two nations. And when he raised it up, wasn't in the Father's hand yet, but when the prophet raised them up, they asked, what are these in the plural? So meaning the two sticks, because he said, I will go and get the first stick. He told them to go out and get the first stick, which was the stick of Judah. So as a national entity, they had to be reconstituted first. And then he said, now go and get the second one. So we have many, which is the house of Joseph and the hand of Ephraim and all Israel. His companion.
Right.
So we're looking at that very clearly as a sequence of how the Ruach is going about restoring the two sticks.
Right.
So fill their testimony. Okay, please.
Ephraim, our audience is going to need to have some information about you guys. First of all, are you Jewish?
Am I Jewish?
Yes.
I have a great grandfather that is Jewish, was Jewish. but we pretty much lost that identity, for a couple generations, in the United States. So I was not qualified. I wouldn't be qualified to say, you know.
But you do live in Israel. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so now, You've told us the name of the conference. Would you repeat that? Or the Congress, I'm sorry. Would you repeat it again?
It's called the B'nai Yosef National Congress.
Okay. And how can people get information about that online? Is there a website?
Yes, there is, Kimberly. However, I have to say that registration's day's cutoff is tomorrow. In fact, the hotel where we'll be having the Congress is full up. They really have no more room. And there actually will be people coming to the Congress and participating, staying in as far away places as near Haifa and Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. Some will be driving, some will be taking buses. It's pretty full right now.
Okay.
However, but we still would like people to be participants in a way, even if they can't be here. And there is an internet site, and because it's the people who are coming as delegates from their communities. There should be the things that we discuss and decisions that possibly will be made at that Congress will be taken back to wherever people are at. And so it should have its connection and contact and influence for those that will not be directly participating. And the other thing is that there has been a suggestion that we've taken up and we've made known to those participating and those who are interested and are not participating, and that is about town hall meetings that groups are having based on the proposals of the Congress. They're looking and reading the proposals, and they're having town hall meetings to brainstorm and to come up with various thoughts and ideas and questions and what have you, so that they can bring that to the Congress, and we can look at those things and discuss them here, and then they can take them back to the places that they come from. And so really participation is not only by coming and being physically present here in Israel, in Ariel, which is in Samaria, in the hotel there, but really input can be given from those who will not be able to come and hear physically.
Are you going to record these sessions, and is it possible that you could live stream them?
We're definitely hoping to do that, Kimberly. We're really looking into those possibilities.
Okay. And who are your speakers?
This too has to be,
most of them are going to be the participants themselves, because this Congress is about delegates. And right now, basically the delegates are led here by the Holy Spirit. So
Larry wants to be a delegate. We had him on last week. He wants to go as a delegate. He hopes that he gets to go.
Well, we made contact, with Kay, who, you interviewed also last week. And we were hoping that Larry would decide to come, and
maybe he will by tomorrow.
We asked Kay. We were just in contact with her, and she was contacting him, and to get him to send in his registration, so that the down payments can be made with the hotel by tomorrow, because it's after tomorrow, there will be no more registration made. So hopefully he will get that in by tomorrow, and I think they're working on doing that.
Okay, so where is the website that people can go to look at it to see if you're going to be able to record the sessions or to live stream and to get information? What is the URL for the website?
Okay, we won't know that yet until we have the people that are coming who are doing it in their particular community. And so we don't have that aspect organized yet, but we could get that information to you when we know.
Okay.
Right now, a website that we're putting some of the information on is called Etz B'nai Yosef, and we'll type that out right now for you. .com.
Oh, okay, and we'll put that link in our in the synopsis.
Right. And I want to go back for a minute to you said speakers. Well, we're actually not calling them speakers. With the format is such that we have three or four main topics, which have a lot of subtopics, and each of these ones will have a presenter, somebody who will present some aspects of this topic, because they're quite inclusive. There's a lot to cover up, and so there'll be these three or four presenters, plus a few from Israel who also have either interest or expertise in each of those specific topics. So it's more like presentations, and after each of these presentations is done, there will be roundtable discussions, and we will divide up into a number of tables, and there will be roundtable discussions around these very topics. And so everyone who wants to, who is coming, will be able to participate and will have an input. So it's really more like a business kind of atmosphere and gathering about practical issues. And
kind of like our Congress in 1775.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. It's very
leading up to leading up to the Declaration of Independence.
But this is a very good point, because we are being reconstituted as a nation, and we need to move from a denominationalism that's happening in the Hebraic Roots movement to a national movement, like you have been, this, your radio station has actually been on that move to go in that direction. But it's going to take some some groundwork to find out how do we move from a religious communities to a working, down to earth community living, in the sense of how do we form communities? How is the Father bringing these communities about? In a sense, instead of having rabbis and pastors as the leaders of a community, you'll have people who are mature and faithful in their duties to begin to be more in the line of a leader in the community and organizing the community in such a way that is biblically oriented, but mainly that has the heart of the new covenant and the spirit.
Right.
Of the new covenant.
Like the men in Yitro. When Yitro said to Moses, no, you can't do this by yourself. Mm-hmm. You got to get a bunch of men here that's got some, upstanding character, and, make them be in charge. They became judges.
Right.
Right. And,
yeah.
and power was being delegated, and there was a lot of service. This ought to raise up the servant's heart, those who want to take responsibility, not for necessarily being on top, but actually being from underneath, and being like those sockets in the tabernacle. What struck me 2 weeks ago in the parasha, the description of, I shouldn't even call it tabernacle. I don't even like that word. It's very misleading. The Mishkan, the abode. In the desert, there were many, many very interesting and relational words used in the construction of various parts of the Mishkan, which, of course, it doesn't get translated, and you can't really translate it into other languages. And one of the words was the sockets, and that socket is called, the sockets are called Adanim, from which we get the word Adon, master. And Adonai, one of the words for that describes our Heavenly Father. And guess what? The sockets are there to support the structure. So the support is from underneath. It's not from the top down, but it's from the bottom up. And so hopefully, if this spirit of community takes over, and the national identity, and the realization that there has to be some serious and practical preparation, even though it seems to be in the natural, it should bring forth some spiritual maturity and depth in those who are engaged in it, and also inspire those same characteristics in the younger ones. And
so let me clarify what I hear you saying is that you are trying to work toward having leaders of the Hebrew Roots community worldwide step up and start to act in one accord, just like they did in the wilderness with Moses, taking responsibility to be servants and to lead people back toward their nationality. Did I say it right?
Yeah, I think along those same lines, you know, there are communities already in the Break Roots movement. I don't think anybody would say, well, we're a church or we're a synagogue. But what's happened, what concerned us and what kind of brought us to the point of deciding on this, having a Congress and moving towards more of the national identity and community of Israelites in the nations, as Judah did, was a concern that we're coming up with some hybrid religion that is between Christianity and Judaism. And what will happen if it stays in the religious realm, we'll never have unity, because as you already know, you know, all the calendars that are out there and the name pronunciations and all the things that bring disunity and confusion, that's a sure sign of Nimrod being present, of Babylon being present. And those religions will never unify around a religious spirit. It never has worked in the past, and it won't work in the future. But Father, when he brought us out, when he brought our forefathers out of Egypt, the first thing he said to us, that you are my, you know, you're my firstborn nation. And I think this is a key that we have to understand is happening to us in this restoration. But we have, there are, someone said, don't reinvent the wheel. So in some ways, we're looking back at our brother, at our brothers in the Jewish community back, you know, in the 1800s, you know, and of course, the circumstance situation aren't the same, but still, they began to gather together in communities and began to develop institutions that were directed towards a time that they would return to the land. And we feel that basically this is what's going to begin to happen in the nations. It has to happen in the nations with the rising numbers that are coming to their identity, Israelite identity, and it's continuing, you know, in a very rapid pace, just as, you know, any, like a wheat field, there are signs of maturing in the field, but then all of a sudden, you know, you'll have a first fruit coming to right before the rest, but then all of a sudden, it's just like, whoom, suddenly the whole field is ripe. So we're looking at the models from the Jewish, our brothers from the Jewish side of the family, and how they went about it. And there was a lot of disagreements and different things were happening, but we've sort of have a theme of unity, amidst, diversity and plurality. We have to accept one another. We have to, as family, and actually we've decided kind of the ultimate goal of this Congress being kind of the first step, is to hopefully at the end, say to ourselves, hey, we are one family. We are right. one people. Let's
Ephraim,
work towards the end.
Ephraim, I've got to cut you off. We've got to take a break, and we'll be back with that thought in continuation after these messages.
KPJC Salem.
Welcome back to the last half hour of the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. We are really excited to be able to present this first conference, trying to unify the House of Israel and, bringing us back together as a people and not as a religion. I've been saying for years, we're not doing religion here. You know, we are citizens of a nation, and now we've got people in the land who are, you know, picking up that banner and having this conference. And I just think it's very exciting. On the other side of the break, Ephraim, you were talking about what was the goal of this Congress, and I had to interrupt you for the commercial break. So why don't you go back over that again?
Well, it's, you know, like you stated on your own name here, that we are a nation, not a denomination. And this is basically what has motivated us to begin to look more at our national identity and begin to see that these communities out there that are gathering together in on Shabbat to praise, to worship, to read the Torah, to study the Torah, and all of these things are been in preparation for coming out of our previous religious activities. However, it hasn't progressed beyond its own sort of religious perspective. And so we're looking at existing communities that have the foundation of Torah already and perhaps have been teaching Torah and the Torah portions and a lot of that for years and years. But what do we do with it? You know, where does it go from here? What's the next step that the Father would want to take us from reintroducing us to the whole counsel of the Father and the Torah, to our identity, our national identity, our forefathers, and as a result of that, our national identity. So what does that mean for our communities that are already existing? We sent out a message a few weeks ago that maybe some of the communities that have already signed for the Congress, some of the leaders from these communities signed for the Congress, we thought, well, maybe they could take these points that we're going to be talking about and have town hall meetings in their congregations. And this has been amazing because we have reports coming back now of how exciting it was to get a different perspective from those who have been meeting, you know, for religious studies, and now to be looking at something even more greater than that is the formation of communities and then connecting communities in the process. So that's sort of the where things are at this point. But it's getting people to think outside the box, as they say. Outside the box of religious activities, religious studies, things that are, you know, in the churches that are being adapted into the Hebrew roots movement, and or from Judaism and all the things that have been written for Judaism, you know, from that standpoint, and bringing those things in, but they're all based on religion, and we're not getting any closer to a cohesive national identity and expression.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that was very exciting to me on the break was when, Ramona, you mentioned how many countries are involved, how many people from Hebrew roots from all those countries. Why don't you talk about that? How many countries are going to be involved?
There are 12 countries.
People 12 countries and 12 tribes.
Exactly. This is including Israel. This is including those of us who are Jewish and Israeli, and but altogether there are 12 from 12 countries, and that is that also is it seemed like a confirmation when the one Frenchman signed in. It was one of the last. I made a decision. We said, "Okay, thank you." The 12 countries.
Reuben and Judah at the same conference.
But you know,
and everybody else too.
But I must say, the representative that's coming from India, he's representing Pakistani, Mizoram,
Kashmir.
Burma, Kashmir. He has, you know, leaders or, you know, contacts in all of these other nations. And as you know, it's a little more difficult for them to get visas and get permission to come. And so they were a little limited to in numbers in, as to the ones that could come. So basically, one of the organizations there called Beit Yaakov, it's interesting, in that area, they we know that there is probably 1 million, 2 million already identified in these countries.
And some of them, and even to refer to your previous program and to last week's, some of them are Muslims. And at the moment, they're Muslims. Still, they know their origins. And so this is motivating these people to send delegations to them. And in fact, this very Pesach, there's going to be a group going to Kashmir and to celebrate Pesach in a country or in a state that's highly Muslim. And so some of these, the delegates of the people that are involved in these activities are also coming to the Congress. And we definitely want to hear what they have to tell us and what they've experienced. And, you know, one other mentioning the motivation for this Congress, and we believe it was mainly the Holy Spirit, but as we see it, it's also a necessary gathering for the sake of the people, of the Jewish people, because there is an awakening among the Jewish people, and especially in Israel, toward the ones that are affiliating themselves with the Jews on different levels, including the, as it is termed, the 10 lost tribes. They're looking to see, okay, they know that there is a Hebrew roots movement. They know that there is some kind of an awakening, but where are you? Who are you? How do you define yourself? We want to see something more clear, more defined, more.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's like Hanukkah. You've had Hanukkah on this.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, it was kind of interesting that someone said, well, you know, we just need to go over there and knock on the doors and tell these Jewish people to let us in. And he said, well, which ones are they going to let in? The ones that pronounce the name
one way
and or the other, which the calendar, those that totally disagree with the religion of Judaism. How, you know, I love the way he's these things, because are you going to be able to speak Hebrew when you get here? You know,
right.
He's really an emissary for us, you know, out there, because he has such a clever way of answering some of the.
And reality check.
It's almost embarrassing to hear the questions that he is being asked.
Yeah.
So I don't want to get there.
Right. Well, listen, you know, you're right about the awakening, because I talked with three separate rabbis when I was in Israel about the ingathering. For those people who are of the opinion that, you know, the ingathering happened, you know, 2,000 years ago, and we're not dispersed into the nations anymore, and so we're all just one big happy nation, you know, they don't believe that in Israel, mm-hmm. the rabbis. I talked with them, and they're interested in this ingathering.
Absolutely.
And so... if they're interested in the ingathering, that means that the 10 tribes are still dispersed. But, you know, one of the things that happened last year, you mentioned on the break, Ramona, and I had carried it in Beast Watch News, was that Sukkot march. That happened for the first time as well. There's a tremendous move of the spirit preparing us.
Mm-hmm.
For the return.
Definitely, really. But you know, we could not invite any one of those rabbis or others who are interested in this move to the Congress, because we're thinking the Northern Israelites, if you will, haven't yet gelled into
right.
a group that can dialogue in a objective manner.
Right.
With rabbis and with people from, except Hanoch, when he knows, he knows what's going on. But others need to be faced with a group that's more cohesive.
Right.
So hopefully that will be some of the outcome so that these kind of dialogues can take place.
That's why we're looking at the history of Judaism. And there, incidentally, there's a series out that we just became acquainted with. It's called Zionism 101. And it introduces you to like Herzl and Jabotinsky and some of the early forefathers, their history. And
is
then
that by
how,
Eddie Chumney?
No. It's
because he has a couple of DVDs too explaining Zionism and Herzl and all the history that was involved with that, the background there. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
It's
a Jewish source.
It's a Jewish source.
Okay.
It's very good. It's excellent.
And we're very interested for you know, people to become aware of this series. It's very easy to watch. These are very short excerpts. But they really open up the history of how Zionism evolved. And
okay.
So it's very, very informative.
You know, when you were talking about the ingathering and the need for there to be dialogue, I just wanted to let you know that next Monday, two of our American leaders, Hebrew Roots leaders, and a rabbi in Israel who is interested in the ingathering will be having a conversation. That dialogue is beginning.
And who is
yeah.
the rabbi, if I may ask?
It's Yehuda Glick and Monty Judah and Eddie Chumney.
Good. Very mm-hmm. good. Yes.
That won't be on the air, folks.
It's not going to be on the air. It's a private dialogue.
Oh, I see.
But, you know, I met with him. I met with Yehuda when I was in Israel, and we were talking about the ingathering, and he wanted to meet some of our leaders here. And so I thought the best two that I could think of are Monty Judah and Eddie Chumney, because mm-hmm. they do the most teaching on that. And they're just really, you know, looking for that and experts
yeah.
on the subject. And so just so that you'll know, see, that's just another another little piece that's happening while we're having the Sukkot March last year and the Congress coming up this year, and we're being called back to Jordan.
It's like pieces of a quilt being put together all around the world. And when it comes together, it's going to be just an amazing, amazing coat for all of us.
A coat of many colors, Teresa.
A coat of many colors, exactly. And then I also found it kind of ironic that we have, as you guys were saying, that there's a reconstitution of Judah going on first, and that's already occurring in the land of Israel. And then we seem to have that same counterpart occurring on the Jordan side.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I just thought that was interesting. The Jews on the Israel side and the Ephraimites on the Jordan side. Go ahead.
Sometimes we can see what the enemy is doing to get a glimpse at what the Father's doing. And this whole idea of a Islamic caliphate, what is that other than the
parallel?
You know, right, the beast
right,
government.
The very parallel of the very thing that the Father's doing to reconstitute the nation of Israel.
And you know, as far as the Jewish nation, I don't know if you've become aware through your contacts recently and maybe before, that there's always been the yearning. Historically, there has always been a very deep yearning on the part of the Jews to rediscover their brothers and to reconnect with them. I mean, there were travelers in the Middle Ages. Mm-hmm. That some of them famous travelers that would go to all over the then known world to look for their brothers. There's a lot of literature that's been written about that.
Well, you know, Yair Davidi, of course, and
yes.
You know, his works. I remember a number of years ago, I asked him, I said, when I first, this was probably 10, 15 years ago, I asked him, okay, you are sending this message out to a Christian world. I said, what happens if these people do come to the idea that they're Israel, or they're Ephraimites, or they're from the house of Joseph, and they all want to start coming back? Well, you know, are you going to allow them back as Christians, or they have to go through conversion? Are they going to have to be Jewish? You know, what's going to happen? And his answer was very interesting. He said, neither. That was his word. They're neither going to be Jewish or they're neither going to be Christian.
And that fits us.
He added something new.
Something new. And I thought that was quite a prophetic statement.
Yes.
Well, praise the Lord.
Yes. So really, we see that, with the Jewish people being more and more in readiness, and in the last 10 or 20 years, there have been others besides Yair Davidi who have been looking for the lost brothers. Some also among the Muslims, among the Palestinians, and in every place possible. I think it is the time. There is such a yearning. The yearning is growing for that to happen. And so, then when we look around, and as Fine was pointing out before, you know, this setting up of this caliphate and a lot of other things that are happening, the destabilization of the Arab countries here in the Middle East, things are starting to be in place for huge change to take place. And some things will take a while and they will be gradual, and other things will happen overnight. And so we just want to make ourselves available for Abba to prepare us.
Right. It's like the Lord is preparing Jerusalem at the same time that he's preparing our place in the wilderness in the south, in Taman, that we were talking about. I mean,
right.
He's preparing both of those places at the same time, while the beast, that caliphate, that government is trying to rise. And by the way, you know, that's what the Great Tribulation is all about. It's the war between these two nations that are going to rise up and fight with each other.
Yeah, it's Psalm 83. And I think this has been pretty much a worn out record already, as people have been pointing out, Psalm 83 now for quite a few years, to show the real enemies of Israel as a nation, and includes us as well, in the
the Jewish nation,
but also the Ephraimite nation or the Israelite nation,
right,
of the north. So if one wants to look at the, it says there, I mean, they gathered together, these 10 nations gathered together to come against, they plan to come against. But the thing is, everything is so mixed, because it says Ephraim is well mixed in all the nations. So we don't really know who's who anywhere.
And yes,
on
yeah.
this plan, only the Father knows, and but He will identify the Abrahamic seed, Isaac, the promised son Isaac, and the seed of Jacob. He will identify the seed that He sowed into the earth, as Yeshua told that parable. He said, and as a Torah principle, you only can sow one seed in the field, and the Father sowed the seed of Jacob, of Isaac.
Yeah.
So we're looking very carefully at these end times, as the harvest is coming close of both the wheat and the tares. So you just begin to think a little bit of all that's happening right now. You know, you could see that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, look, you know, we know the difference between the wheat and the tares. One of the differences is that the wheat humbles itself by its stalk bends over when it is ripe. And that's what's happening among the Hebrews. The tares, they rise up and they stand up straight. That's how you know the difference between them.
Right. I'm going to add to that a little bit, because it's when the Spirit flows over us as wheat, we would bow to that ruach, and mm-hmm. like you're saying, the tares stay up straight. Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
You know,
that's exactly true. And also, if you take more look more at that, the rapture actually happens to the tares while the wheat stays in the ground.
Exactly.
And what's causing the wheat to bow its head is that it is heavy with fruit. It is fruitful. It is usable.
Yes.
Unlike the tares, that they have nothing to give.
But it's also heavy with sorrow over those feast days. It's sorrowing for the feasts to be able to go to Jerusalem. Zephaniah 3:18.
Yeah.
Just want to pick up another point when we're talking about the wheat and the tares, is talking to Steve Matthey this week, and he's very connected with, I can't remember his name.
Yair
you just mentioned him. Yeah, Yair. And he was saying that one of the problems that we have in the Hebrew roots myth awakening is that Ephraim is divinely charged. I'm quoting this. Ephraim is divinely charged with a pervasive characterological sin, amidot, which is pride.
Mm-hmm.
And when we see people coming into this awakening, they're coming in very hurt. Typically, mm-hmm. Laura used to say with their hair on fire, because mm-hmm. they're coming out of so much air, and this hurt tends to put up a wall of mm-hmm. not wanting to be hurt again. And so there's this tendency to say, I'm not going to exchange one pair of traditions for another pair of traditions until I've studied it out. So we come in a bit of a bronco state. But unless we realize that we need to humble ourselves because of our pride, which is what got us away from Abba in the first place.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That
exactly.
we're going to be sifted out, because we're not going to be bearing the correct type of fruit, because we're going to be incapable of bringing our heads down in humility. So
yes.
unless we realize that we do have something to learn from our other brother, and not to just say, oh yeah, you know, they don't know what they're doing. They they mess things up. It's all tradition. It's all oral and all that. No, that's just, we need to learn more.
Right.
Well, just to say in three words, Ephraim is not returning in the same way that he left.
Right.
Father is going to bring him back in that state. He's bringing him back to establish his kingdom.
Hey, listen, Frank and Ramona, please keep Teresa and I informed of what's happening so that we can post on our Facebook page. And thank you for being on.
Hey.
Light now shines, the darkness must flee. The darkness must flee from the living word. His light now shines, the darkness must flee. Yeshua is the light of